This is some relatively new work out of my lab group at the Smithsonian Environmental Research Center. It's the idea for this research started as a conversation over beer between me and Don Cahoon several years ago. Don's at the U.S. Geological Survey. But it wouldn't have gotten off the ground if we hadn't been able to get some funding and attract Adam Langley to join our group here. Adam spent a few years as a postdoc in my lab and is now an assistant research professor at Villanova University. And the data I'm showing you is Adam's data. And in fact, most of the slides I'm showing are Adam's slides. And by all accounts, Adam ought to be here giving this talk. But he's at the Estuarine Research Federation meetings this week. So I'm the stand-in. The work I'm talking about today this is a new site that I'll be talking about in the photograph. And it is an experimental manipulation of atmospheric carbon dioxide, where we're enriching carbon dioxide, increased nitrogen deposition. And the primary response variable is soil elevation. We're interested in how these global change factors interact to influence soil elevation, because as we've heard quite a bit about today, that's going to influence the capacity of these wetlands to keep pace with sea level rise. This was inspired by another study on the site, which is ongoing and now in its 23rd year, I believe. It's Bert Drake's study of elevated CO2 alone, not in combination with nitrogen. And what we have here on the y-axis is net ecosystem production. And you'll see that the elevated CO2 treatments in red normally lie above the ambient treatments. There's been a persistent stimulation of net ecosystem production at the site due to elevated, two times elevated CO2 over the course of the experiment. But there's also been quite a bit of variability in this response. You can see in some years it decreases to practically zero. Turns out these are years of drought. And we think there's some interactions here with nitrogen that explain some of the variability. This, again, is a reason for crossing carbon dioxide with nitrogen. Also, the area in the, what I've done here is shade the difference between the ambient and the elevated CO2 treatment net ecosystem production rates, because this represents extra carbon being added to the system. We're very much interested in the fate of that. And so that leads to a couple of questions. Do plants respond to elevated CO2 and nitrogen? Well, do their responses to those variables influence soil elevation? And if so, is some of the extra carbon that these systems take up at elevated CO2 sequestered as soil organic matter? This is, in brief, the experimental design. We have 20 open-top chambers that are 2 meters in diameter. There's 5 each of a control, plus nitrogen, plus carbon dioxide by itself, and the interaction of nitrogen and carbon dioxide. I want to emphasize that this is a high brackish marsh. It only floods on something like 2% of high tides, which explains why this site is an organic soil. It's a histosol, very low rates of sediment input. And that's an advantage, in my mind, for a study like this, because any changes we see in elevation are due entirely to biotic processes, inputs from plants, outputs through microbial respiration and such. We're not having to deal with the interaction of plants on sediment deposition here. Okay, this is how we measure soil elevation. I suspect many of you are familiar with surface elevation tables, but for those of you who are not, real quickly, this is a stainless steel rod driven to the point of rejection, which in our case is about 7 meters deep. And it serves as a stable elevation point. We extend the stable elevation point out across the marsh with an aluminum arm, and then drop fiberglass pins through the arm, measuring the distance from the top of the pin to the top of the arm. And this gives us very precise estimates of change in soil elevation. We also have these shallow SETs, which are aluminum cylinders buried about 30 centimeters deep. And by measuring to the top of those, we can separate changes in total profile elevation into the portion that occurred in the deep part of the soil, which is about 450 centimeters at this site, and that part occurring in the rooting zone, which is obviously quite useful for us given the treatments we're applying mainly operate through plant responses. For those of you who have seen SETs, you've never seen one like this. This monster has 100 fiberglass pins in it. Remember, we have 20 chambers. We've dubbed it the monster arm. This is Jim Dahl, a hydrological technician in my lab who makes all these measurements. And he's, if you knew the guy, he has the perfect personality for this stuff. He's just very precise. And I think that has something to do with some of the data I'll show you, which turns out to be fairly decent. So, real quickly, we see effects of elevated CO2, and in some cases, interactions between elevated CO2 and nitrogen on shoot productivity and root productivity. This is what we expected. This particular experiment is in a C3 plant community, and we know from Bert's long-term study that we would see these sorts of responses. I won't be going into this today, but it's quite interesting, and I know John Erickson back there would love to talk about that data. But I'm going to jump right to some elevation data, and I'm going to start by explaining that it turns out there's quite a bit of spatial variation in the thickness of this 450 centimeter thick deep layer over the course of a year. So there's temporal variation and there's spatial variation overlaid on that. And we've figured out that this spatial variation operates along this axis from the upland out. We need to account for this somehow in our replicated experiment to be able to do traditional statistics on it. And it turns out that we can, because at each chamber, what Jim's doing here is measuring elevation inside the chamber and outside the chamber. So we have these paired measurements, and you can see that those inside and outside measurements are highly correlated so that they're picking up this spatial variation. And we can use those differences as a covariate in the analysis. And we do that very simply just by calculating our changes in the elevation as a difference between inside and outside. We call that relative, in this case, relative surface elevation. And so this is the most important slide in the whole thing. And after I talk about it, you can just leave if you like. This is relative surface elevation as a function of our treatments over the 2 years of this experiment. We just finished our second growing season. And there's a couple of things to point out. First of all, I think I'll start with the control plot here, which has shown an overall loss in elevation of about 2 millimeters in 2 years. Because of the way we made these calculations, that ought to be zero if there's no chamber effect. Apparently there is a chamber effect on soil elevation, which might not surprise anybody. But the good thing about our experimental design is we can pick this up. Despite a chamber effect, which apparently led to a loss of a couple of millimeters in these chambers, the treatments with CO2, either alone or in combination with nitrogen, showed a net gain in elevation of nearly 4 millimeters. This is a 6 millimeter swing over 2 years. It's big. Changes in sea level in this area are about 3 millimeters per year, roughly. So it's a significant treatment effect on elevation. Another thing to look at is that if you look at the 2 years, We actually saw at the end of the first year the same thing, where there was where the elevated CO2 treatments were higher in elevation than the ambient treatments. And we really wondered whether this would just completely disappear over the course of the winter, because the plants stop growing, they die back, collapse, they disappear. And in fact, we did see a little bit of a loss in elevation. But then the second year, it bounced back up. We definitely didn't lose everything. It seems to be additive. So these CO2 effects seem to be additive, which, you know, is interesting, because eventually there should be some feedback. So you can only build the soil up so high before you get increased aerobic respiration. This is all the more interesting because if you look at what happened in the deep zone over this period of time, there was actually a loss in elevation or a narrowing. It became less thick. All of the chambers became less thick over the course of over the 2 years. And so this increase in elevation is happening despite the chamber effects and despite a loss of elevation in the deep zone, which we don't entirely understand right now. In this system, as I said, it's an organic soil, and so we can't explain these changes in elevation by the effect of plants on trapping sediments. It has to be due to productivity, and in fact, we are able to explain the changes in elevation to some extent by changes in root biomass and subsurface stem biomass on the sites. This correlation clearly leaves some other factors to be explained here, but below ground biomass appears to be causing the soil to swell upward. One of the other factors that may explain some of the variability was a topic of a paper earlier today, priming. And this comes out of an experiment that we just published in Global Change Biology. Amy Wolf published this. And what we found in a greenhouse study is that elevated CO2 yields larger plants, and that larger plants yield higher redox potentials in the soil profile. Higher redox potentials should stimulate decomposition, because aerobic decomposition is more efficient than anaerobic. And in fact, we did see this in the greenhouse study, that in elevated CO2, we were actually getting higher rates of soil organic carbon decomposition than at ambient CO2. And so we were looking for this in our field study, and we have some evidence of it down here. This is from the first year, and what you see is that compared to the control, the treatment plots all have higher redox potentials. And this is something we want to track over the next couple of years to see whether, in fact, we start to get increased rates of decomposition that might negate some of the gains from increased plant productivity in terms of elevation. We also have some evidence that elevated CO2 is stimulating anaerobic decomposition, and you can learn a lot more about this just by visiting Jason, who's right over here, Wednesday between 4 and 6 at his poster. He has some excellent data on that topic. So this increase in elevation may help explain a mystery, and I'm sure John could update these numbers for us, but that extra carbon I was talking about, we refer to it here as missing carbon, that extra carbon amounts to about a kilogram of carbon per meter squared per year. So there's a kilogram more being added to the elevated CO2 treatments. And we have been looking for it for several years. We figured out that we can't explain it by increased respiration, by increased dissolved carbon export, or by increased percent soil organic matter. And it looks like we can explain perhaps half of this just by increased elevation. Again, that's a carbon sequestration issue. So my simple conclusion here is that elevated CO2 may have a silver lining. It may increase the capacity of tidal wetlands dominated by C3 plants to keep pace with sea level rise. Of course, the CO2 is ultimately accelerating sea level rise, but on the other hand, helping marshes, C3 dominated marshes, keep up. So I'll just stop there and open it. Thank my funders and my colleagues and open up for questions.
Really, it's kind of close for lunch, but we have lunch, I guess we can have more questions, the best questions.
Do you have any idea why you get this increase of the subsurface?
Actually, I don't have the slide with me, but it is very highly correlated with mean sea level. We actually think that changes in mean sea level in this organic soil are changing the buoyancy of the wetland. That's one crazy hypothesis.
How do variations in water table on a monthly basis
Well, you know, this is a tidal system that doesn't have huge excursions in the water table, but nonetheless, you know, we do have wet and dry years that cause some effects. And to be honest, I don't really know, but you know, you would anticipate that in a dry year you'd get more decomposition, and some of these gains in elevation probably would disappear during the winter. That's one reason we want to run this experiment out over several years to pick up some of that variability and see how persistent these elevation effects are.
Yes,